Speaker for this evening, Rosie B. from Palma Valley.
Yes. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. You got any water over there?
Yes. Good evening. My name is Rosie, and I am an alcoholic.
Rosie.
Wow, there's a lot of people in here. Darn. Okay, first of all, I want to thank my Creator, who I choose to call God, for another day of sobriety. I want to thank Sam for asking me to come out here and share my experience, strength, and hope with you guys. You know, it's always an honor to be asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. Actually, it's like ultimately my responsibility, you know. I'm just giving back what was freely given to me. So I want to welcome all the newcomers. You know what? All I want to say to you is keep coming back and don't leave before that miracle happens. Okay, and that was told to me, and that was the only thing I heard the night I decided I wanted this. So I say that to all the newcomers. And I want to thank my daughter for being here with me tonight and my friend from my home group for coming out here to support me. And like I said, I just want to thank God for another night, of another day of sobriety. My sobriety date, I'm nervous. Thank you. My sobriety date is June 10th, 1997. My home group is the Paula Monday Night Carry the Message to the Native American. And my sponsor is Norma M. from Long Beach. So those were the three things I was told I had to get when I got here, if I wanted to stay here. And that's what I did. So, you know, Norma hasn't always been my sponsor, but I'll tell you during my story what happened, you know. Anyway, I'm going to share with you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. You know, and this story that I'm about to tell you, it's how I remember it, and it's what happened to me to get to where I am today. So I was born. I was born here. I was actually born here in San Diego, and at a very young age, my parents moved us over to East L.A., to East Los Angeles, and we lived there. That's where I grew up because my dad couldn't find work out here or something, so we moved out to East L.A. And I know when you hear East L.A., you know, you hear about gangs and hoodlums, cholos, all that stuff. Well, yep, I got caught up in all that. I got caught up in it. So growing up, I come from a big Mexican Native American family, and growing up in that family, you know, even though there were seven of us, I was still always feeling afraid, alone. Like, I didn't have anybody. So what happened is growing up, always wanting that attention from my parents, and there were seven of us. So it's like, you know, I just kind of strolled through life and did what I had to do. So growing up, I remember, you know, my parents having these parties or gatherings, whatever you want to call them, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, and sometimes until Monday. And I remember that because I remember having to wake up. I was in first grade, and I remember having to wake up and going over the coffee table, picking up my spelling book, and looking at it. I had to remove a bottle from it, a beer bottle. And somebody had spilled beer on it, and I remember looking at it and then just clutching that book and walking to school like that, just thinking of a lie, you know, and thinking of a lie. What am I going to tell my teacher? What am I going to tell my teacher? And I was, like I said, I was maybe in first or second grade. And so what happened is I got to school and I said to my teacher that I had fallen in a puddle of water. And, you know, she looked at me and said, well, your book is fine. You can still use it. And let me tell you the relief that I felt after I told her that. Like, I lied. And I share this because that was the first time that I remember lying. And, you know, I got away with it. So throughout my life, I began lying. And, you know, sometimes I would get away with it, sometimes I wouldn't. So, you know, I went through school like that, always afraid. And David, thank you so much for your share. I identify with that whole moving a lot because, you know, having seven kids in the family, we were always moving. And we were moving to different districts. I went to six different junior high schools, or middle schools, what they call now, because, you know, either we were getting evicted or there was just too many of us. At least that's what my mom told her. There was too many kids. I found out later in sobriety that it was because of the partings that were going on. You know, the cops were being called over. Somebody was beating up on somebody, and the neighbors were complaining about it. So, you know, we moved a lot. So I never really had any steady friends. You know, during one of these gatherings, I was about 15 years old, and when I took my first drink, my dad gave it to all the girls that were there at the house, and it was orange juice and Seagram 7. I remember that. It was a little cup. I took that drink, and I remember going down, and felt good, the burn, you know, and I still remember that right now. But yeah, I remember that feeling that I got in here, you know. And then from that night, it helped me tolerate my family. Because really, I was always ashamed of my family because they drank every weekend, you know, and I would compare my family to everybody else's family at school. And I would think, I'm sure their family doesn't drink like my family does. I'm sure they're not having all these people passed out on the floor and having to walk over them when I go to school. You know, I was always thinking that as a kid. And so eventually it got to the point where I didn't drink. That was 15 years old. I didn't drink until I was 21. But during the 15 to 21 years, you know, I went through high school, you know, and we finally moved to this place called Bell, California. And we moved into the neighborhood, into the barrio. If you guys don't know what the barrio is, it's the hood, you know, and where there was nothing but cholas and cholos out there. And I remember sitting outside of the steps and checking out these girls with the big hair and the makeup. And I looked and I go, I want to be just like that. And I really meant that. And sure enough, you know, I started getting my summer job slowly but surely. I ended up buying my Dickies, my flannel, my jerseys. You know, I started cutting, you know, dyeing my hair and cutting the feathers and doing these big ears and, you know, and the makeup. My dad got on me. My dad was very strict with all us girls. So when I started wearing all that makeup, he would say to you, I don't want you dressing like the girls around the neighborhood. So, you know, I have this thing that you tell me not to do something, I get this overwhelming desire to do it even more. You know, you say no, I'm going to say yes. And with a resentment, you know. So what happened is, you know, he told me, don't even touch your eyebrows. And what did I do that night? I shaved off my eyebrows and I drew them up kind of like a clown. And I walked around thinking I was cute. You know, I had the clown eyebrows, the brown makeup, the white under here, the dark lipstick. I was just looking, my dad would call me a raccoon. You know, I walked around, you know, thinking I was bad, you know, really being this little girl inside, hurting, sad, full of fear. And I would walk around, you know, the first person to look at me wrong, like, what the F are you looking at, you know? And I had, like, all these girls I used to hang out with, so I thought I was bad. So I would talk crap to everybody, and I knew I had my backup. So, you know, that kind of lifestyle went all through high school. You know, when I got to high school, I met him. I met him, number one. And I'm saving their anonymity. Him, number one. And when I met him, he was a high school dropout. And he had a nice 70 Impala, and I fell in love. You know? So, you know, he would hang around the school. You know, he didn't go to school. And, you know, I really thought this guy was hot, you know, because you know, I heard only one person describe the kind of guy that I used to like were those guys, you know, with the slick hair, the dicky, you know, with the little, walking with a little slouch, the cholo. You know, I heard one person say, I used to think that look was charisma. Today I know it to be psychosis, you know. And it's like, oh my gosh, that is so true. Because nowadays, like, hey, you know, more power to you, but it's not my thing, you know, and today, but, you know, no offense if we have any out here, you know, I'm sorry, you know, that was just my life, that was my life back then, you know, and so, you know, I supposedly fell in love with this guy, and again, my dad got to the point where he didn't want me seeing him because he was a cholo, he didn't want me hanging out with him. So what did I do? I went out and hung out with him even more, and I eventually ran away from home. Well, I left home. I was already going to be 18. I left home, and I moved in with him and his parents. So when I moved in with him and his parents, of course, you know, he loved to drink. And, you know, I didn't see nothing wrong with it because it wasn't like a weekend thing like my family, the family I come from. He loved to drink with dinner. And that was kind of odd for me, you know, like, okay. So, but, you know, then drinking progressed. He started drinking more. I wasn't drinking yet, but he started drinking more. And then I find out I'm pregnant. 3 months into this relationship, I'm pregnant. And, you know, then that's when the domestic violence began. You know, I would tell him not to leave, not to go out, and he'd say he'd go out. Then I jump him, he jumped me back, he hit me, I hit him. And it was just crazy. It was like that for 4 years. And what happened is, you know, there was a lot of infidelity during that time. So eventually I had my little boy, my son. And when I had my son, I made a promise to myself that I would leave this man, that I didn't want this kind of life, you know. And turns out that I stayed with this man another year and a half because I got pregnant again and I had a little girl with him. So I had a son and a daughter with this man. Eventually, it got to the point where I really got tired. You know, I must have had a moment of clarity during that whole relationship because I found out he was cheating on me. And when I found out where he was, there I go, thinking I'm this little bad girl. I packed myself with a little steak knife about that big, you know. And here I go down there to where he is. And somehow, I don't even know until this day how I broke that door open, and there I am. I ended up stabbing him. I ended up cutting her up. And you know, all I remember is a blackout anger, you know, all that. All I remember is blood, the blood on the sheets. And I left, you know, I ended up grabbing my two kids, and I went home. I went back home, and I remember breaking everything in the apartment and saying, I'm done. I'm out of here. And, you know, by this time, my parents had moved back to the Indian Reservation up here in Valley Center. And I decided to come back to them, and I did. I came back with two babies. And, you know, I came back to the same thing because my parents were still partying. They were still doing the same old thing. And you know what? This time I was 21. And what happened? I just joined them. I just joined them because I couldn't do anything about it. I had two babies, and I started drinking. I never mourned the loss of this relationship, never mourned anything that had happened, never talked about it. All I know is that I came back to my family, and there I was, right back at it. You know, I took advantage of my mother for her to watch these two kids for me, you know, and I started taking off. I started taking off on the reservation. You know, if you have booze, you can find anybody to party with, anybody to drink with out there. And so I did. You know, I met a lot of people that love to drink like I did. You know, so during this time, I had those two babies. And, you know, my mom would say, you know, it's time for you to take care of this kid. You should get a job, get a career. I was about 21, 22 now. And I'm like, okay, I will. But you know what? Instead, I would go out, take off, and start drinking. I started drinking at bars because my thing was it was okay to drink at nightclubs. It was okay to drink at other people's houses, but not at a bar. That's so low. It's like, ooh, that's what I thought. You know, so what happened is I ended up just, you know, hanging out on the rest for a while. And then my mom just, she was on me and on me. And all I said was, you know what? I'm going to take my kid and move out with my sister who lived up north in Stockton. So I ended up moving out with her. I took my two kids with me. And you know what? It was the same thing. I drove out there with my two babies. And then it turned out that I was back doing the same old thing because I met people out there who loved to drink just like I did, who loved to do the same things I did. And all I just thought I was having fun. I was 22, 23 years old now, and I was just having fun, I thought. You know, but I wasn't taking care of these two kids. This is about the time I became a very abusive mother to these kids. I started beating on them. I started hurting them. You know, I would leave them with whoever would watch them for 10, 20 bucks. You know, that's what I did to these two babies. So my sister got a hold of my mom and said it was a bad idea for Rosie to come up here because now she's out partying. She's leaving the kids everywhere. So my mom called me and said, you know, if those kids are in the way, bring them back down to me. And let me tell you, without hesitation, I drove from Stockton all the way to Valley Center, 8 hours, dropped off those kids, and I went right back up there, you know, with no hesitation. And, you know, I'm not proud of that, but, you know, that's exactly what happened. I left those kids, and I would come and see them whenever I had time to come and see them. Meanwhile, I was over there partying. I met him, number two, you know. So then when I met him, it turned out that this guy, I didn't know at the time, but he was one of the biggest drug dealers out there in Stockton. And I just thought he was handsome, he was cute, he had a nice car, you know, always looking at the outside, you know. And sure enough, you know, 3 months later, I was pregnant again. And, you know, all that flashback of the first relationship I had with this man, I didn't want to go through it again. So what I told this guy is, hey, I have to move back to San Diego. You know, I have two kids over there. I got to go help my mom take care of them, which was a lie. It was a lie because what happened, I ended up moving to Carson, and I stayed with a cousin of mine there. You know, this cousin of mine had a little boy, and she was taking him to T-ball. She was taking him swimming lessons, doing all the mommy things. You know, that's what I wanted. I wanted to do the same thing, but I didn't know how. Nobody ever taught me to be a mom. And, you know, that whole mother instinct didn't come to me. And that's what I wanted. So I moved in with her, and I was pregnant with my third child. And eventually, when I gave birth to that little girl, I remember drinking, even the beginning of my pregnancy, and drinking with when I was pregnant with her. And so when it was time to deliver her, I remember being sick. They wouldn't bring her to me, so a few days passed, and they finally brought her to me. And I held that baby in my arms, and I remember saying to this baby, I am so sorry for what I put you through. I will never treat or mistreat you or beat you or abandon you like I did your brother and sister. And I cried. I remember I couldn't even share this without crying, but I remember crying and bawling that day and talking to this infant that I would never do that to her or again. So right after I got out of the hospital, about 6 weeks into, you know, being in Carson, I ended up moving back up to the reservation with my parents again. And this time I came home with another baby. So my mom had three babies to take care of. You know, I told her I wanted to get right. I was tired of feeling the way I was feeling. Because during those 5 years between my second child and my last daughter, you know, it was just, you know, that whole self-loathing that they talk about in the book, that self-loathing. And even this is where I became an unprotected bar drinker. I started drinking at bars, and I'm an alcoholic woman, so I know what it's like to be talked to in ways you don't want to be talked to, touched in ways you don't want to be touched, disrespected when you don't want to be disrespected. I know what that's like, because I was out there, and I was allowing all that to happen to me. And so when I took that baby to my mom, you know, she goes, what are you going to do with your life? I go, I'm going to get my life together. I'm going to go back to school. So I did. I eventually ended up going back to school in the medical field. And my mom ended up watching these kids while I went to school, while I got back on my feet. And, you know, at this whole time while I'm going to school, I meet girls out there that were drinking. Right after school, we're going straight to TJ. And we're going out and we're partying out there, you know. And then I eventually got a job at the Indian Health Clinic in Valley Center. And, this time, like I said, I was partying with these guys. I met girls there. And I said, I have a really cool place we can go to. Yeah, where? TJ. So we ended up going to TJ. Right after work every Friday, we were taking off to TJ all weekend. All weekend we were going to Tijuana, and that was our weekend thing, you know. And again, I'm not the type of person that drank every day, but I drank every weekend. And, you know, even though the mental obsession was there all week, I was thinking about it. And I remember even the swearing off and saying, you know what, this weekend I'm going to stay home. I'm going to take care of these kids and help my mom out. And it turned out that as soon as the girl said, what are you doing tonight? Whatever you want to do, you know, it's like, didn't even consider the children. So what happened is I would take off on Friday. The girl would call and I'd be gone. We'd be gone to Tijuana again. And that happened, you know, with three kids at home, and that happened a lot. After that, let's see what happened. Oh, eventually I met him, number three. Yeah. I met him. See, I'm always falling in love. And, you know, 'cause when I fall in love, I fall in love all over, you know. So I met him number three. Well, yeah, number three. So I met him number three. So when I met this number three gentleman, you know, he was sober, and I didn't know that. But I met him at a Christmas party, and what happened is I was drunk, and, you know, I'm like moving my hair all over, walking around, and he was sober, and I went up there to talk to him and tell him how handsome he was. I can only do this when I'm drinking, you know, so, you know, because alcohol did all that for me, you know, it made me feel prettier, it made me feel taller, you know, so I went up to him and I said, "You're handsome," and, you know, we started talking. Eventually, you know, we exchanged numbers, and he lived in Las Vegas, and I was living out here in Valley Center. And, you know, it turned out to being a long-distance relationship. You know, he was flying out to San Diego, or I was flying into Vegas, and I finally asked him, "So why don't you drink?" He's like, "No, I just don't like to drink." He didn't tell me nothing about AA. He didn't say he was an alcoholic. But one of the times that he came out here, I was having a party at my house, and he came, and he just started drinking. And then the next thing you know, he passed out, he pissed on himself, and I was like, "What the hell?" You know, so it turned out that I asked him the next morning, I said, "Hey, what happened to you last night?" And he's like, "You know what, I can't drink, I'm an alcoholic." I go, "What?" I go, "No, you're not." And he's like, and he said, "Yes, I am." He goes, "Yes, I am. You know, I don't drink because I go to AA." And I looked at him, I go, "What's AA?" And he's like, "It's Alcoholics Anonymous. I go to meeting, you know, to help me stay sober and not drink." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." You know, I was just like so naive. And I'm like, "Okay, well, you continue doing AA or whatever this thing is." You know, so we stayed together, and he began his sobriety all over again while he was living with me, and I was still drinking it up, you know. And you know what? This man was the man who came to AA. He went to meetings every night, and then I resented that, and I started asking him, "Well, why do you go every night?" He goes, "They have meetings every night all around the clock." And I'm like, "Well, I'm going to go with you." And he goes, "Yeah, sure, you can come with me." And so I went with him, and let me tell you, when we got in that meeting, I sat next to him, I checked out everybody in there, and I'm like, "Damn," you know, I just couldn't believe it. And then I heard people talking, and then I was sitting back there taking your inventory and talking about you, and like they would talk about this, and I'm like, "Yeah, I bet, uh-huh, look at you," and you know, just you know, and all that, you know, I'm talking, and then he would tell me, "Shh," you know, he would say, "Shh." I'm like, "Well, look at him, look at her," you know, talking about everybody in AA. So, you know, we wanted to be together. So what we ended up doing is going to therapy. Him and I ended up going to therapy. And, and the counselor recommended that I go to Al-Anon. And I'm like, "What's that?" He goes, "Hey, you know, it's for friends and families of alcoholics." And I'm like, "Okay, sure, I'll go." You know, willing to do whatever I wanted, you know, had to do to save this relationship. So I did. I went to Al-Anon. And at this time, around this time is when there was a meeting in Oceanside. It was an Al-Anon meeting and an AA meeting. And I remember going into the Al-Anon meeting and then sitting in there. And then I'm like, "Oh, my God, look at all these people feeling sorry for themselves. What the heck?" You know. And so when we were walking out of the meeting, well, this gentleman has shared about his wife leaving the kids and whatnot. And I just looked at him, and I'm just looking at him. And then at the end of the meeting, I went up to him, and I said, "You know, sometimes as a mom, we need a break from our kids." That's what I said to him. And then, you know what? He just looked at me and he said, "Honey, maybe you belong in the other meeting over there." And I said to him, "But I'm not an alcoholic." And he just smiled at me and he put his hand on his shoulder. He goes, "We'll see you next time." You know, and, you know, of course, that stood in the back of my head. So I went back to, we went back to the counselor, and she asked, "So what did you think of Al-Anon?" "That's not for me. There's a bunch of people in there feeling sorry for themselves, blaming everybody else for their problem. No." She goes, "Then why don't you go to AA? But go to AA without him. Go by yourself." And I'm like, Okay, but I'm not an alcoholic. So you don't have to say you're an alcoholic. Okay, so, you know, at this time, it's when I went to the Tuesday night speakers meeting in Escondido, and that was in 1997, I believe. Yeah, 1997 when I went. And I went, oh, my goodness, look at all these people. But at this meeting, though, everybody used to dress up. Everybody who had a commitment, the girls were really pretty in there. The guys were, like, dressed up in ties and nice shirts. And it was kind of, like, a little different from other meetings that I had been to. And I remember looking at these girls and just looking at them. They can't be sober. They can't be sober. You know, looking at them. And I wouldn't say anything. So I went home that night, and I remember getting into an argument with the man I was with. It was actually about the following week. And got into an argument with him about something. And then I said, you know what, I'm out of here. You know, and I have to say that this man took care of my three children as if they were his own children. You know, they were not his children, but you know what? He took care of them, made sure they were in bed on time to go to school the next morning. He made sure they got to school. He made sure they were doing their after-school curriculum activities, you know, because I wasn't responsible enough to do that. So what happened is we got into an argument. I ended up taking off, and I remember going to a liquor store and buying two bottles of Boone's Farm, apple and strawberry. And you know what? I always say if I would have known that was gonna be my last drink, I would have did something else. You know, because yeah, Boone's Farm. You know. So I ended up grabbing those two bottles, going home, and I'm driving around the res looking for anybody to drink with me, because I tell you, if you have alcohol, you'll find somebody to drink with. And that night, I didn't find nobody. So what I did, I parked in front of my house, and I drank those two bottles really quick. And then I went into the door, and I, bam, bam, you know, really hard, and he comes out. My house, right? He comes and goes, the kids are asleep. And then I just started crying, and then he goes, you'll get it when you get it. And then until I just started crying. I said, I'm tired of feeling this way. I'm tired. You know, he go, well, go back to AA. So I did. The next day I was at a meeting. And this time I was willing to listen to what was going on in the meeting. I went into that same speaker meeting, sat in the back. And I'm like this with my arms crossed, thinking I'm bad. You know, still this badass chick. I'm thinking. And I'm sitting there looking at everybody, thinking I'm better than. And then this woman, all happy, comes up to me. Hi, are you new? And I'm like, no, I'm just visiting. And then she said to me, well, honey, you keep coming back to visit us, and don't leave before that miracle happens. And that was the only thing I heard that night. It was the only thing that I heard, because I'm thinking, I need a miracle in my life. I definitely need a miracle. And I just kept watching this woman, you know, and then she spoke. And then I totally identified with everything she was saying, because I was willing to listen. And she was talking about her being from L.A. to East L.A. too. And, you know, I eventually asked this woman to be my sponsor, because they kept talking about getting a sponsor. And I'm thinking, I'm going to ask her to be my sponsor. But I wouldn't identify myself as an alcoholic yet. And then eventually, again, anybody here with the first 30 days. And I always have to say that it wasn't me who raised my hand. I feel that it was the spirit of my higher power, who I choose to call God. Because I went, I'm Rosie and I'm an alcoholic. And that same relief, I felt like, you know, I'm home. And just the weight off my shoulders that came off. And everybody welcomed me. The women were really nice in there. And it was the meeting where all the women were dressed up really nice. And I kept comparing my jacked up insides to their outside. They looked so beautiful. They looked beautiful. They were dressed up. And, you know, so eventually I asked this woman to be my sponsor. And she became my sponsor. And she was strict. She was tough, because she goes, if you want me to sponsor you, are you willing to go to any length? And I just said, yeah. I didn't know what that meant, but I said, yeah. You know, so... So she had me come to the meeting 15 minutes early, stay 15 minutes after, made sure if I didn't have any money to put in the seventh tradition, to put change in there if I didn't have any money. And then she goes, when the newcomers are here, you welcome them. And I'm like, darn, you know, I'm thinking, damn, this is a lot of work. You know, that's what I'm thinking, and I'm new, so, but I did it. I did everything she asked of me, and I did, you know, and not realizing one day at a time I was staying sober, one day at a time. Eventually, you know, the relationship with this man and I, You know, it came to an end, and we were together for 10 years, you know, and, you know, he did his thing, I did mine, and, you know, today we're friends. He lives in Las Vegas, too. He moved back to Las Vegas. He has his family, got married, has family, and I continued on with doing my AA thing, you know, my deal here. You know, I started going to meetings. I started, you know, sponsoring people. I started picking up women from the Serenity House down there in Escondido. We were going to meeting and doing all this, you know, and I wasn't even looking for a relationship. And, you know, they say that's when you find one, when you're not looking. And what happened is I met this guy. I met him number four, you know. So when I met him, this dude was an army. He had no clue about AA. He knew nothing about AA. All I know is that he was asking me to go out on Friday night, and I had a commitment as a secretary at a Friday night meeting. And I said, well, I can't go out on Friday night. Well, I could, but till about like 10 o'clock. And he's like, okay. Like, all right. So, yeah, we would hook up after the meeting. And then eventually he asked me, well, why can't you? What do you do on Friday night? And I go, I go to AA. He goes, you do? And I go, yeah. He's like, that's cool. He had no clue, but, you know. So he's like, that's cool. So eventually we started dating, and then about 6 months into that relationship, this man asked me to, he proposed to me, and he asked me to marry him. And, of course, I said yes, you know. And I married this man in 2005. Yeah, 2005. And then everything was great for the first 3 years. First three, 4 years. And then I was still doing my meetings. He didn't say nothing about it. But then eventually I started getting to him because he would say, you know, you've been sober this whole time. You're still going to meetings? I'm like, yeah. You know, I'm an alcoholic. I have to go to these meetings. I want to go to these meetings. There are people in there that are like me. Not like you, like me. And he's like, well, you know what? You're never home. There's never dinner. And blah, blah. He's telling me everything the wife should be doing. I looked at him like, I didn't sign up for this. You know, I looked at him. And so, you know, instead of arguing with this man, what I did was I ended up saying, fine then, I'll stay home. I won't go to meetings anymore. And that's exactly what I did. I stopped going to meetings. I stopped calling my sponsor. I stopped, calling any of the girls in the program. I just left everything of AA, kind of put it on the back burner. And then I stayed home with this man like he wanted me to. And let me tell you, that's a big mistake because I stayed home, but I didn't stay home quietly, you know. So, because this man started irritating the heck out of me. Everything, the way, when he would walk next to me, oh, you know, when I would see him, the way he walked, the way he talked, everything started irritating me about this man. And I couldn't, I couldn't handle it. And then he started to see that I became this witch with a capital B. You know, I became this woman that, wow, what the heck, you know. So eventually, you know, I started behaving badly and, so you know, being sober, dry drunk, behaving badly. And he got to see and he goes, I can't do this anymore. I go, well, neither can I. So grab your stuff and get out. And you know what? He did. With no hesitation, he grabbed his stuff. He was gone. And he grabbed all his stuff and he was gone. And then I had hope that we were going to get back together. I go, this is my husband. We're going to get back together. And then 3 months later, I was served with divorce papers. And get this, I wasn't drinking. But when those divorce papers said, it like, a drink sounds good right now. But you know what I did instead? I got my sweat on, put a hat on, and I went down to Escondido, and I went to the Tuesday night speaker meeting where I had gotten sober. And I remember sitting in the back, coming, doing it all over again, you know, sitting in the back, and I didn't want anybody to. I felt the same way I felt when I first came back to AA, because I did 4.5 years of no meetings, no sponsor, no nothing, almost 5 years. And let me tell you, it's only by the grace of my higher power, God, that I didn't drink. Because, man, there were so many reasons to drink, you know, but I didn't. And eventually I went back to AA, and I had all these temporary sponsors for a while. And I said, wow, you know, I need to get into this thing. I really need to get back into this thing. And, you know, I would go back because at the beginning, I used to love to hear chapter 5 read. You know, I used to love to hear that read in meeting. And I would go back for that, even if it was for that. And I go, you know what, I want to feel the same way I did when I first came in here in 1997. And so what I did is I drove to L.A. and I looked for that woman who became my sponsor, because she had moved to L.A. or to Marin, somewhere. She had moved somewhere. So I went looking for her. I knew what meeting she went to, and I went down there, and I asked her to be my sponsor again. I told her everything that had happened. And she goes, are you willing to go to any length? And this time I understood what she meant. And I said, yes, I am. I was tired of feeling the way I was feeling. And sure enough, that's when my journey began. And this was in 2014, 15. And I started working the steps. And she started explaining things to me more clear. I started to listen more clear. And, you know, of course, we all know that this is how it works. And this is why it works, you know. And I had to remember that. Like, yep, you know, so I did. I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've been back ever since. And you know what? It's been a journey. A lot of ups and downs in sobriety. You know, those three children today are grown kids today. My son is 36 years old, and you know what? He has his own deal, his own things he has to deal with, but he knows that I will always be here. As long as he's willing to get sober, clean and sober, I'm going to be here for him. But if he chooses the life he has right now, he needs to stay out there, because I really don't want anything to do with it. I love him because he's my son, and I can't do nothing for him, period. You know, same thing with my other daughter. You know, she made me a grandma in 2010, but then she decided in 2014 not to be a mommy to this little boy. So this little boy lives with his dad, but I get to see him so often. And then that baby that I held is sitting here today, you know, and she's one of us. And that baby that I held in the hospital that I was apologizing to. You know, a lot of things have happened in sobriety. You know, my mom developed cirrhosis of the liver, and her liver is deteriorating really fast today. You know, but you know what? The way I make my living amends to her is I get to take time off of a job and take her appointment. I mean, we come all the way out here to La Jolla somewhere, and we drive all the way out here from Valley Center. And you know what? It's okay today. I get to do that. I get to do that for my mom. You know, I owe a lot to my parents because they were always there for me. Even though I was not a good daughter, I was not the mother my children deserved, you know, but I was the best that I'm doing the best that I can today to be the best mom that I can, the best daughter I could be. And you know what? Sometimes I don't do it perfect. You know, I know there has been so many reasons for me to just say, screw all this AA thing, I'm out, you know, but it's because I did that first step perfectly. That's why I did the first step perfectly. And I get in the hurt. I get in the middle of the crowd. You know, I like to be involved. You know, I like to be of service. And, you know, like I said, a lot of things have happened in sobriety. I lost my house in 2010 and 2007 in the fires. So just recently, we had all those big winds in Palma Valley up there. And I had to leave my house for 2.5 days with no power. And I was like, oh, but it just brought me back to 2007. I lost everything in the fires. And, you know, I didn't drink over that. And it's only by the grace of God. Because, again, my thinking tells me, just have a drink and get it over with. That's what my head tells me. But you know what? I have a higher power today that I wake up to, and I thank him every day, every morning for my life. You know, I go to sleep and I thank him for keeping me sober today. You know, it's not always easy, you know, because I wake up with untreated alcoholism every day. I do. I wake up like that, and I don't know what the day holds, but you know, one day at a time, I just do. You know, I'm just grateful to be here. Again, if you're new, I just want to welcome you. I want to say, you know what, this program works. Give it a chance. Don't leave before that miracle happens. You know, I'm grateful that I'm doing things differently today. I'm just glad I'm not doing it like I used to. So thank you for letting me share tonight. Thank you.